You probably remember the statement of the Scottish preacher Robert Murray McChain when he was 29 and he was dying. He lay dying, and in his bed he said, "God gave me a message to deliver and a horse to ride. Now I have killed the horse, so I cannot deliver the message." And he died very prematurely when he was only 29 years old. Is this God's will for everybody? I think the answer to this question helps us understand that exceptionally, God may call some people to kill the horse very young. But this is the exception, not the rule. The rule, as Paul hinted, is to keep a balance. God is a God of balance between self-giving and taking care of yourself and your own family. Both go together, and they are both very important. So on this session, I'll try to share with you some of the thoughts, the insights I have been learning both in my own personal life and my professional life in the last, 30 years. I've given this sort of lecture in, I think, all over the world. So it is enriched by the feedback from many personal experiences from colleagues, especially doctors and pastors. I would like to start with a verse in the Song of Songs in the Old Testament. "They made me take care of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I neglected." That man was a professional gardener. He was excellent in taking care of the other's vineyards. And then his own vineyard he neglected. And that is the sad story of some pastors, doctors, especially those of us working in the caring professions. I'm going to use two metaphors this afternoon. One is the metaphor of the garden, and the other is the metaphor of the swimming pool. So I hope that will help remember. So if you associate both and imagine a garden with a swimming pool, you will be able to remember the lecture this afternoon. Caring for our own garden, our own person and family, is not only a right, but a duty. That is one of the most important introductory remarks I have to make. It's not only a right, but a duty. It is part of good stewardship. And actually, there are some strong warnings, especially in Paul's epistles, to take care of ourselves and our relatives, our family, our loved ones. The consequences of neglecting our own person are often disastrous because they affect not only ourselves, but those around us, the people besides ourselves. Some people believe that being burnout in the work of the Lord is a symptom of spiritual maturity. It's a more spiritual attitude. It's a kind of unconscious vocation to martyrdom. They want to become martyrs. I would like to suggest this afternoon that far from being a more mature attitude, it's a symptom of immaturity, and even it can be a serious sin. Because the consequences, as we said, affect the care of our own person and the whole family. So we have the right and the duty to care for ourselves, our own vineyard. We switch now the metaphor, and for a moment, in this first point, I would like to consider the swimming pool. And the first point in my lecture this afternoon is called the empty pool syndrome. And I hope that in 10, 20 years, if we meet again, if you forget everything I'm going to say this afternoon, at least I hope you remember the concept of the empty pool syndrome. The empty pool syndrome. Actually, in all professions, you have to give something of yourself. But this is especially true in the caring professions. Self-giving is increased. Doctors, nurses, pastors, social workers, teachers, especially doctors and those working in medicine, our self-giving is increased because we work in direct contact with human pain and suffering, and that is draining. There is an episode in Jesus' ministry that reminds us of this reality. Jesus is surrounded by people, and he asks, "Who touched me?" And the apostles for a minute wonder, is he crazy? Everyone is pressing him. Hundreds, literally, of people are touching him, and he asks, "Who touched me?" And Jesus replies, "I know someone has touched me because power, dynamis, energy, self-giving has gone out of me. I have given something of myself. My energy, my power, my dynamis has come out because I have healed that woman." So self-giving always implies giving power, energy. In this sense, we can compare, and that is the metaphor, we can compare our life to a swimming pool and our energy to water. If you want the swimming pool in your garden to be properly arranged, you always need two springs of water. Two streams of water are needed. At the same time, output, that is water coming out, your energy, our inner energy, emotional, spiritual, coming out. But you also need input, the water coming in, and that is our personal renewal and refreshment. Whenever there is more water coming out, more output than input, the pool gets empty. How? Little by little, in a very subtle way, and you are often unaware that the pool is getting empty. This is one of the most disastrous mechanisms of stress. Stress is 100% of the times subtle. You are unaware of it. The pool is getting empty and you are not aware of it. A balance is needed between the input and the output if you don't want the swimming pool to get empty. Actually, in nature, we find the same fact, what Jungian psychologists call the principle of the two movements. This is not a Jungian concept, it's a reality that God created the world this way. The principle of the two movements. Everything in nature has rhythms. Everything in nature has rhythms, which are complementary and alternate. Complementary and alternative movements. Winter follows summer. Night follows day. One must follow the other. Everything in nature has rhythms that are complementary alternations. Our heart, take the example of our heart, we are doctors, is another excellent example. Contraction, the systole, follows expansion, diastole. The two movements are successive and complementary. Firstly, the heart receives blood. Then it is ready to distribute it. Unfortunately, many people have not learned to be in diastole in their lives. They are in permanent systole, believing that they will be able to distribute blood all the time. It was the French thinker and scientist Pascal who said, "Most of the misfortunes of man come from the inability to stop and rest." Most of the misfortunes of man come from the inability to stop and rest. The empty pool syndrome is a direct result of not respecting the way God has created the universe and ourselves with this principle of the two movements, complementary alternations. My first suggestion this afternoon, if you want to prevent burnout and take care of your own garden properly, is that you respect. I will make four practical suggestions this afternoon. And if you follow these four advices, you are very likely to be in good shape for the rest of your life. I hope so. The first one is that you carefully respect the principles God has established regarding rest. Respecting these two movements, which are complementary and alternative. God has set up three kinds of rest in creation. The day rest, that is the night. Respect the night rest. How many hours? That is personal, and everyone can decide. You know how many hours you need, but it's very important that you respect the night rest. The week rest, one day a week. Of course, God didn't have any need to rest. He wanted to rest to set up the pattern, the model for us to follow. Those of us who are committed to ministry and have responsibilities in church, I'm sure most of you, if not all here, have responsibilities in church, find it difficult. Pastors have Monday off, which is a day off for us. Some people say that Sunday, instead of being the day of the Lord, is, oh Lord, what a day. So Sunday is not the day of rest. But we have to be careful to respect the week rest. And thirdly, the yearly, the season rest. God has established for nature to rest in winter. Nature rests in winter. We need an yearly rest. We usually take holidays, especially in summer. I would like to say that in my own professional experience, over 90% of patients who came to me with what we call depression caused by exhaustion, burnout depression, over 90% in the last 5 years had no vacations whatsoever. So if you want to have an exhaustion depression, stop taking summer vacations, and in 5 years, I can guarantee you will go and see a psychiatrist to get treatment for depression. Respecting the summer, the season rest, is a way of obeying God. As we said, it's not a right, but a duty. If we want to avoid the empty pool syndrome, start simple. Because life is not that complicated. Start simple. Respect the night rest, respect the week rest, respect the season rest. And you will find, certainly, that helps a lot. Now, my second point this afternoon. We've seen so far the empty pool syndrome. Now, how can we identify when the pool is getting empty? We said that it was quite a subtle process, so we should be aware. Prevention is always better than cure. We should identify the warning symptoms before the pool gets empty. I could mention many symptoms, but I don't want to make you tired. It's been a long day, and I hope very fruitful. I would like to mention four warning symptoms that there is more output, more water coming out. You are more in systole than in diastole. First of all, irritability. Easily angry. A change in your way of being. You used to be more patient, not that irritable. And for several days, 1 week, 2 weeks, you become more irritable. If that happens only one day, it's not important at all. We all have bad days, dark days. But if day after day, for 1 or 2 weeks, irritability, easily angry, harsh words, especially at home, when you relax, that is a warning symptom. Easily angry, irritable. Secondly, inability to anticipate or experience pleasure. Inability to anticipate or experience pleasure. You do not enjoy anymore those things, hobbies, small things that you used to enjoy, reading or listening to music or whatever it is. You are not interested in sex anymore. A decrease in the libido. Sexual desire decreases as an expression of this inability to anticipate or experience pleasure. Changes in your libido. Work itself becomes boring. And that leads to the third feature. Lack of enthusiasm. Lack of enthusiasm or excitement about new projects or goals. It is difficult to find new projects or goals. Nothing seems worth doing. It's a little bit what we could call the Ecclesiastes syndrome. Vanity of vanities. It's absurd. Nothing is worth doing. The emptiness. Nothing seems worth doing. Finally, the fourth symptom I would like to mention, which is a warning symptom, you are not yet in burnout, but you are in the way to it, is bitterness, disappointment. You start complaining about almost everything. Being critical is good and necessary. Being hypercritical is an expression of tiredness and a change in your personality. And you are in danger of becoming cynical. Hypercriticism leads to cynicism, bitterness, too disappointed. Usually, when you are very tired, too tired, at the same time you are too disappointed, very disappointed. They usually go together. So irritability, easily angry, inability to anticipate or experience pleasure, lack of excitement or enthusiasm about new projects or goals, bitterness, cynical, too disappointed. Now you are ready to test yourself, make your own checkup, if you are in the way to burnout or not. Of course, they could mention many other symptoms, psychosomatic symptoms, but I will not deal with this because you are doctors, so I don't need to tell you about this, insomnia and changes in your body weight and all these symptoms that you probably are acquainted with. Notice that these symptoms I mentioned have to do basically with attitudes and reactions. Attitudes and reactions. We start changing the way we react, easily angry, hypercritical, etc., and attitudes. I want to stress the idea that it has to be a change in the previous pattern. If you have always been a cynical, that doesn't make the point. It needs to be a change in your previous pattern. If you've always been an irritable person, it doesn't make a difference. It needs to be a change. Now, we go to the third question this afternoon. How to neglect your garden? We move again to the metaphor of the garden. How to neglect your garden? We have seen so far the empty pool syndrome, which is a natural process of not respecting the process God has created. The symptoms, warning symptoms. Now, how to neglect your garden? I would say all the causes could be grouped, summarized in four. There are basically four reasons, four pathways that ultimately lead to burnout, to neglecting your own garden. First of all, perfectionism. Perfectionism. This is what I like to call the struggle against our inner policeman. The struggle against our inner policeman, or what the psychoanalysts call the superego. The superego. It's important to notice the difference between neurotic perfectionism and the search for excellence. How can we know the difference? The latter is related to spiritual maturity. It's an expression of spiritual discernment, maturity, and seeks to please God. The former, neurotic perfectionism, arises from a very strong superego that probably has to do with your upbringing, and it can also come from insecurity. We know the difference between the neurotic perfectionism depends too much on the opinion of others, the approval of others. Now, the opinion of others is important, but it's not number one criterion for ourselves. There are things that are more important. The opinion of people can be a help, but it should not become a tyranny. The tyranny of the opinion of others, always needing to please others, can be a symptom of neurotic perfectionism. The tyranny of depending too much on others' opinion. Probably you would like me to go a little bit further into the difference between neurotic perfectionism and the search for excellence. I don't have time. I suggest Richard Winter's book. You know, Richard Winter is a British psychiatrist working in the States. Has written a book called Perfecting Ourselves to Death. Perfecting Ourselves to Death. If I remember well, it is published by InterVarsity Press. It's an excellent book on perfectionism. Richard Winter is a fine Christian colleague. Perfectionism. Our motto here should be enough is enough. Enough is enough. The second pathway that leads to burnout is activism, dispersion, doing too many things. So first, perfectionism. Second, dispersion, doing too many things. Being involved in too many front lines may jeopardize both excellence and health. Being involved in too many front lines may jeopardize both excellence and health. This problem, dispersion, may be due to several reasons, but I would like to mention two which are relevant to our topic. Why are we sometimes so dispersed? I would like to mention two reasons. First, the difficulty of saying no. The difficulty to say no. When I say no, I feel guilty. Many people have a great problem to say no without feeling guilty. I wonder why we are not taught at school to say no. We spent hours and hours learning mathematics, and no one ever told us how to say that simple word, no. And that simple word, no, can be life-saving. Learning to refuse is essential to health and to good stewardship of the life God has given us. I like to say that the word yes is the most powerful. The word yes is affirming. It's very powerful. But the word no is the healthiest. The word yes is the most powerful, but the word no is the healthiest. Learning to say no, learning to refuse, is essential to avoid burnout. And there are many practical ways you can do that. I have developed my own strategies. A phone call, asking for some speaking engagement or writing an article, whatever it is, I never reply to a phone call immediately. I have to think about it, I have to pray about it. I never give an immediate yes. Immediate yeses should be exceptional in our lives. Perhaps when you say yes to your fiancé or your future wife, it should be an immediate yes. But there are very few situations, occasions in life where you should give an immediate, a quick yes. You have to think and reflect and pray about it. Related to this, there is a second reason why many people are so dispersed, doing too many things. And that comes from the first one. The lack of clear objectives and goals. The lack of a vision, a call, as we heard this morning, a clear call. We need a road map to run the race of life. In this sense, I find it very helpful to review my set of priorities. I'm sharing a little bit of my own personal experience here. To review my set of priorities every 5 years. I work in periods of 5 years, And every 5 years, I totally review my set of priorities. And I have learned to establish a small group of counselors, what John Stott called advisory group of elders, H-A-G-E. Actually, I learned it from him. The advisory group of elders with whom I meet every year to review the task, the targets accomplished, the priorities. I meet every year with 3-4 people together to review priorities. And there, this is my second suggestion to you this afternoon. Create your own support and accountability structures. Each one of you, regardless of the responsibility you have, should create your own support and accountability structure. Spanish helping a countryman is another Spanish. It's important that we create our own support accountability structures. Choose 3-4 people, people you trust. You can include your spouse here. Probably he or she is the person who knows you best. And be accountable and get support from them. These small structures, personal support and accountability relationships, are essential to set up priorities in life. So activism, dispersion, is the second way to neglect your garden. And here I would like to close this point by quoting Hans Bürki, who was a former IFES general secretary, a Swiss. You know that Swiss people are famous, have a reputation for being precise and very structured. And the motto of his life was reduce, renounce, simplify. That was the motto of his life. Reduce, renounce, simplify. And I've always remembered that motto. That helped him. And might help you too. Actually, this is what the book of Ecclesiastes says, Ecclesiastes 4:6, the realistic message of Ecclesiastes. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil. What a beautiful verse. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toils. We may be able to do many things, usually medical doctors are very capable people. We are able to do many things, but we have to choose which things are really important. Thirdly, self-ambition. We have seen perfectionism. Secondly, activism. Third, self-ambition. Too worried about my name. Too worried about my name. The problem in the second point was doing too many things. The problem here is that I am too worried about my name, my reputation. This is what I like to call the Babel syndrome. Genesis 11:4. So that they built a tower, so that we may make a name for ourselves. That was their motivation. So that we may make a name for ourselves. That seems the goal of many of our medical colleagues, to become immortal, to become immortal in the area of medicine, to make a name for themselves. And here comes my third suggestion this afternoon. We need to review our theology of work and our theology of success. Both of them go together. I urge you, if you are about to neglect your garden, to review your biblical framework, your theology of work and success. It is very important. Our theology of work, very briefly, work is not an end in itself, but an instrument, a means. It's not an end, but a means to accomplish God's purpose for my life. I don't have time to give references, but this is very clearly described in Colossians 3, 23 and 24. Colossians 3, 23 and 24. Some people do not work for living, but rather live for working. This is a perversion of the biblical order. We do not live for working, but we work for living. What shall we say about our theology of success? How is success measured in society? Is it different from the way it is measured in Christian terms, the biblical idea of success? What is a winner for society, and what is a winner in biblical terms? Who is a winner? Success in the Bible does not primarily depend on results, but on attitudes. Success in the Bible does not primarily depend on results, but on attitudes. On the attitudes, how we perform our work. Success is measured in terms of faithfulness, love, obedience, perseverance. All these attitudes wonderfully summarized in the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians chapter 5, verse 23, are much more important than the results. Because sometimes you can work perfectly. You can do a wonderful work and the results be less good. This is exactly the experience God had with his people. Isaiah chapter 5. I had a vineyard. I did all the things I could do in this vineyard. God was the perfect gardener. And I expected that as a result of my work, said God, the grapes would be sweet, nice, fine, an excellent harvest. And yet, the result was wild, bitter grape. And God worked perfectly. We live in a fallen world where the results are deeply affected by the outcome of the fall. So even sometimes we work perfectly and the results are not good. So we should not measure result, we should not measure success in terms of results, but attitude. And to close this point, the pressure to be number one is very dangerous. Because being number one, as we heard this morning in one of the quotations from David, should never be at the expense, the cost should never be family, conscience, friends, health. I will always remember Bjorn Borg. Are you fond of tennis? You remember Bjorn Borg, the famous Swedish tennis player in the 80s. You remember him? He was number one in the ATP classification, first player in the world, in the ranking. All of a sudden, he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I quit. I give up. I'm leaving." And all the people were astonished. All the journalists said, "Are you crazy? Why are you leaving? You are the best." And his answer was absolutely overwhelming. "I cannot endure anymore the cost of being number one." That was his central argument. "I cannot endure anymore the cost of being number one." That's the reason why he left. Being number one has a high cost. We as Christians in our professions are not called to be number one. We are called to perform our work the best we can, regardless the results. And this has to do with the theology of success and work. This is why I said we need to review all these concepts. Finally, the fourth enemy is hurry, haste. Too much pressure and haste. It was Carl Gustav Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist, who said, "Hurry is not of the devil, it is the devil. Hurry is not of the devil, it is the devil." And you will probably find out that working a lot may be tiring, but it's not draining. What really drains your energy is working under strong pressure, great pressure, and in a hurry, hastily. When you work under this, the pressure of time, that really makes you tired and is really draining. So whenever it is possible, we should try to avoid to be in a hurry. We never give the impression, as Paul Tournier said, we never give the impression that we care when we are in a hurry. Now, we have covered 3 points, and I have one more point to go. I think we are quite well with time. I know I am aware I have to finish at 4 o'clock, but I'm managing quite well. So I would like for you to divide in couples now and share in groups of 2 or 3. I know it's not very comfortable here perhaps, but yes, let's divide in groups of 2 or 3. And I would like you to discuss the following question. How can we care for our own garden? How can we avoid all these things that I've been mentioning so far? What are the duties in the garden? And that will be my last point briefly this afternoon. But first, I would like you to consider what you think that the duties in the garden should be in the light of what we have been saying so far. So about a couple of minutes, 3 minutes, and then I will close with my last point. Okay, let us continue for about 5-10 minutes, and then we will close. Now let's summarize a little bit what we've been saying so far. We have been considering the empty pool syndrome. We have been considering how to identify when your pool is getting empty. We have been considering 4 main pathways that lead to neglect your garden. And now, finally, and probably the most important, how to prevent it. The duties in the garden. How to care for our own garden. How to care for ourselves, our own vineyard. You remember probably that verse in 1 Timothy 4:16. Take care of yourself and of the doctrine. Timothy received this advice from Paul at the age of about 35, when he was about 35 years old. Notice the order. First the man, first the person, has to be all right, and then the work, the theology, the teaching in this case. If the person is not all right, the work most likely will be also wrong, because our work is usually the result of our own person. The work is affected. The origin of stress may sometimes lie outside ourselves, but its treatment is always within ourselves. This is one of the concepts which is important. The origin of stress may lie outside ourselves, circumstances, etc., but the solution, the answer, always is found inside ourselves. The treatment must always be inside, because stress is not the disease itself. It is the symptom. What does a gardener do in the garden? If you have a garden in your home, there are basically 3 activities. Pruning, watering, being patient. The 3 activities. Don't forget, these are the 3 main activities you need to care for your own garden. Let's consider one by one. First, pruning. Learning to renounce. Learning to renounce. Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things. Mary has chosen the one. Unfortunately, the New International Version says what is better. The original says the one, the only one that is good. The only one that is good. Luke chapter 10. Any gardener has to prune. What is the purpose of pruning? Would you like to tell me? If you have a garden and you like gardening, what is the purpose of pruning? Exactly. To bear more fruit, to make it more efficient, to grow properly, for the tree or the plants to grow properly and to bear more fruit, we need pruning. Pruning in our life, in our garden, may imply two things. The most obvious, renouncing. Renouncing small things may be easy, or perhaps big areas, cutting. Choosing, renouncing is a constant exercise in our life. And choosing between the good and the evil is very good, but choosing between the good and the best is a very, very difficult task, but necessary to survive. There is a trend in architecture called minimalism. Are you acquainted with minimalism? With Mies van der Rohe? His logo, his motto, the motto of this architect is less means more. I like that sentence, the motto of minimalism. Less means more. And this is my fourth and final suggestion this afternoon, to do less in order to do better. To do less in order to do better. I don't see God in the Bible concerned so much about quantity as much as about quality. Our God is a God who is much more concerned about the quality of our character, our obedience, our performance, if I can use this word, than the amount of things we do. When he praises, in the parable of the talents, he praises the servant, Jesus is not praising the percentage, the benefit, firstly. Jesus is praising, firstly, the attitudes, faithfulness. You have been faithful. It's not the percentage, but the attitude. One had been lazy, the others had been efficient and faithful. So it is once more attitudes. God is much more concerned on the quality rather than the quantity. We have to learn to renounce, to prune the trees in the garden of our life. Second, watering. Watering. Pruning implies learning how to renounce. Watering implies learning personal renewal. Learning personal renewal. We as doctors are constantly in need for training. But that's true also in our own personal life. We need to keep the plants, the trees fresh and alive. And we need to water them. Otherwise, they wilt. I would like to suggest that our watering comes essentially from relationships. And I would like to mention four relationships which are a source, a spring of water in our life and therefore basic to our personal renewal. First of all, and of paramount importance, our relationship with God. Our relationship with God, a personal God, is the vital tool in our personal refreshment. The need for prayer and personal meditation on Scripture. What's the difference between a nominal Christian and a newborn Christian? We could say many things, but I like to summarize them by saying that for a nominal Christian, a nominal believer, God is a he. For a newborn Christian, God is a you are. He's near. You have a relationship, a personal relationship with Him. You talk to Him, you listen to Him, you interact. It's a love relationship. That is probably the most essential hallmark of a newborn Christian. God is no longer a He, but a you. Through our relationship with God, we receive the grace that enables us and strengthens us. Jesus had a contact with God that has no substitute whatsoever. Secondly, the relationship with our family. The relationship with our family, those of us who are married with the spouse, eventually with the children, should be a source of refreshment. God uses families to support us. Remember the family of Moses? Sometimes families can complicate things, like in the case of David. David was a total failure. David did well almost everything in life. Everything he touched, he did it well. He was a superb man, except that he was a total failure in his family life. Total failure. And yet, it is said that he was a man according to the heart of God. This would be another topic. But family can be a source of refreshment. Thirdly, the relationship with special friends. Relationship with chosen friends. I think it is the Chinese who say, if you have a friend, you are fortunate. If you have two or three friends, you are very fortunate. You are the most fortunate. If you have four friends, you are a liar. You cannot have more than four, but two or three friends. Friends should be very, very chosen and exceptional. Relationship with friends can provide that support, that accountability structures that we mentioned before. Paul had friends. Remember this morning, Timothy, Epaphroditus, Luke, who went with him in all his trips, and not only to be his doctor, but to be, I think, a friend. Jesus had friends. It's very important to have special friends. And finally, the relationship with books. Reading is basic for personal renewal. Some books become like living friends. I think it was the American psychoanalyst Carl Menninger who first referred to the expression bibliotherapy. Bibliotherapy, the therapy through books. Menninger used that expression, which I like very much. Books can become a sort of therapy, they are real friends. So it's important that we keep reading. Finally, you have to prune, you have to water, you have to wait. Learning patience. Learning patience. James 5:7, be patient until the Lord's coming. The example of patience, says James, see the farmer. See how the farmer, the gardener, waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, and how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. Patience implies viewing, looking at things, events, situations, persons from God's calendar, from God's perspective. And God has certainly a calendar, a timing, which is not ours. We have to learn to renounce pruning. We have to learn that personal renewal that comes from relationships, watering. And we have to learn patience, waiting. I would like to close. In the Bible, there are three concepts that go together. They are linked, like the legs of a tripod. That could be a lecture in itself. Peace, shalom. Health, which in Hebrew are very related, etymologically, the words are very related. The words, peace, health, and truth. Peace, health, and truth go together. For example, in Jeremiah 33:6, they are explicitly put together. Nevertheless, I will bring health and healing. I will heal my people and will let them enjoy abundant peace, and truth. You see, beautifully expressed together, the three concepts. Ultimately, health, the prevention of stress, is inseparable from God's peace, and both of them are inseparable from God's truth. This is the simple yet profound secret of personal renewal, because real self-care can never be fully achieved on our own effort apart from God. I think this is all I wanted to tell you. I will let Paul close the session and then have a time for prayer, I think. You wanted to say something here now and then.